It is 8 o'clock. You've got it on KHUM, Cutton, Eureka, Arcata, and McKinleyville, and streaming on the web at khum.com. And so we've got ourselves a beautiful day today, and a good day for us to delve into a tough topic, part of our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign. The topic we're dealing with today is the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. We got a wonderful panel of guests in the studio, and we'll start off by introducing my partner for the past 18 years of doing this, Sherry Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sherry. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm really happy to be here with a panel of wonderful guests and a plate of donuts.
Yes, indeed. Good ones, too.
And just let me just identify myself as the Director of Field Education in the Department of Social Work at Humboldt State University and the Chair of the Humboldt County Domestic Violence Coordinating Council. And to my left, we'll go ahead and let you introduce yourself.
I'm Jackie Brennan. I'm the Street Outreach Program Coordinator at the Youth Service Bureau's Raven Project of Redwood Community Action Agency.
Excellent.
Marianne Hayes, Marianne with the North Coast Rape Crisis Team.
Megan Gocher, Senior Probation Officer with Humboldt County Probation.
Fantastic.
Welcome. Welcome, and thank you so much. And thank you, Mr. Bill Damiano, for letting Megan come and be with us today. And Marianne, we wanted to just start and ask about how Paula Arrowsmith-Jones is doing after her accident. And
she's doing well. She's doing recovery at home, and she has lots of lovely supportive friends, like people on the panel here. And she's on recovery, and she's a warrior woman, so we're working at keeping her down a little bit.
Yeah, she's very, very strong. And if you're listening, and I hope you're actually asleep, but if you're listening, we're sending our love, and really, we miss you. So
absolutely. And I'm getting so many people called, and they said, how is she doing? What's the extent of her injury? Is there fairly minor, from what I understand, right? She has some bruised ribs.
Yeah, cracked ribs. Mm-hmm. Parts of her hand are broken.
Oh, and, dear.
Sprained foot. So all over, pretty banged up, but manageable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean,
we're very thankful.
Yes,
it could have been a lot worse.
Oh, it could have been a lot worse. I mean, mm-hmm. considering, I mean, there's pictures of the vehicle, and it's like, wow. Mm. And the description is just horrific. Anyway, thanks for getting us all up to speed, and we all wish Paula the best, of course. So the topic that we're dealing with covers actually it's a very wide spectrum. It's sort of a catch-all, and a lot of stuff falls into it. We're dealing with the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. This is one of those topics that a lot of people don't want to talk about because it is rather uncomfortable. But it's one that needs to be talked about, and there have been a lot of high-profile cases that have come to light recently that really make it really time to talk about this. And I'm not sure where we want to start. Sherry, do you have a thought
on
that?
Well, I just,
so much to cover.
Some of the research on child sexual exploitation has revealed sort of three levels of sex trafficking, local regional networks involving multiple adults and children, and large national and international networks where children are traded or sold as commodities. And so we're really wanting to focus more on the local scene, but I think we have to be able to talk about all of it,
sure,
the bigger picture, as we talk about sexual exploitation of children and youth involves physical abuse, pornography, prostitution, and smuggling for unlawful purposes involving economic gain.
Now, you hear about the trafficking of people, basically human slavery, sex slaves and whatnot. And you're thinking, okay, third world country stuff. This happens right here, mm-hmm, and has happened right here in Humboldt County.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Marianne, you and Paula have gone down to some human trafficking trainings in the Bay Area. Do you know anything about sort of the corridor concept of 101, that there are these groups of people that will take children up and down the highway? Is that just a recent story, or?
I don't know that that's a recent story. I think we're paying more attention to it. And, when something gets highlighted, then people focus a little bit on it, but I definitely think here in our area that we need a whole lot more training about that because youth is very vulnerable, and because of the programming and everything that goes on in these kinds of situations, it's very similar to ongoing domestic violence situations. It really impacts the survivor's view of things. So it's really makes more hurdles for them to reach out and try and get some assistance. And I think the more training that we all get around that will make us more accessible to them.
Right.
And radio shows like this, I really appreciate you all making this a forum for this because I think the more we put this information out there that all of us are here and aware of it and acknowledging it, then that makes it a little crack in the opening for a survivor to go, okay, maybe I can try and call these people and see what's happening.
Right, right. And so, Megan and Jackie, if you want to just, like, contribute to, like, what your vantage point of maybe working with some youth.
Well, I guess I'll start. At the Raven Project, we work with youth who are homeless or runaway on the streets or at risk. And youth age 10 to 21. So we see young people in all different types of situations. A lot of our clients are traveling through the area. A lot of them are local youth that might encounter risky situations just on the streets of Humboldt County.
Right.
And navigating the lack of resources for youth in Humboldt County. A lot of them stop in at our drop-in center.
And of course, you know, your clientele are have almost a target painted on their back as perfect for this kind of exploitation.
Yeah, homeless youth are. I think it's. I don't know the exact numbers. More at risk of exploitation, but they also have higher rates of domestic abuse and exploitation in the home. So
at least in 2012, 300,000 youth were either victims or at risk of becoming victims in commercial sexual exploitation. And just 10 to 50% of homeless youth engage in what's called survival sex, the exchange of sex for food, money, shelter, drugs, or other basic daily needs. And that appears to be the only option at the time. So that's why programs like Raven are so valuable and essential to get some of those other basic needs met in another way. So I think the really poignant point here for all of us is that there's an at-risk vulnerability that where youth feel there are no other choices. So, Megan, do you want to talk about some of the clients that you work with?
I primarily work with youth that are wards of the juvenile court. And I run a small group of kids, and I ask some of them what they thought that this meant. And so I have a list of some things that they kind of came up with. And a lot of it was the media, some of the, like, social media. And so I kind of looked into that a little bit. But that's primarily who I work with is wards of the court, and they're at risk for removal of the home. And so they may be in some positions where they've been homeless at different times or that they're putting themselves in high-risk situations or their family at life is putting them in those situations.
Now, one thing that you touched on, Sherry, that caught my ear and may have caught the ear of some of the listeners is a commercial aspect of this. You know, oftentimes, you know, we've on this show, we've, you know, talked about, you know, interfamily violence and abuse, but there is a commercial aspect to what we're talking about today, where there is an industry, a business that these people are bought and sold as commodities, right?
Yes, yes. And what's encouraging, and I'm really glad Marianne talked a little bit about the training aspect. What's encouraging is the slow change of policy makers that slow change of looking at this situation in a different way, of holding the people who are doing the trafficking as the responsible party and less punitive towards the youth and seeing the youth in that light. And there has been some legislation in California, AB 12 in 2011, the abolition of child commerce, exploitation, and sexual slavery. So, and that required a person convicted of seeking the services of a prostitute under the age of 18 be ordered to pay an additional fine not to exceed $25,000. So, and that money is used to fund programs and services for commercially sexually exploited minors in the counties where the offenses took place. So that's, you know, I mean, it's slow change, but we are seeing that kind of that light shifting from the vulnerable youth as the target person for criminal justice to the people who are actually making money.
And one of the things I wanted to comment on that, the statement of survival sex, I think that that's a really clear statement about how some survivors are dealing with this, but I also want us to make it clear that survival sex isn't anything about consensual sex. It's because if someone needs food to stay alive or housing not to get sick, we should do that as one human being offering it to another, and there shouldn't be payment of sex in trade of that. And so sometimes I think, especially when we're working with survivors who are experiencing it, there's a lot of predators are putting culpability on them, and they're owning it and feeling like, well, yeah, I did this for this, thinking, like, assuming that it's their, that's their choice. When you're in that dire of a need, that's not your choice. That's coercion and manipulation, force, and all those things. And I think that's really important to recognize.
And probably, I would imagine, kind of hard to prove. I mean, it was like, you know, you could just say, hey, I'm just doing this out of the kindness in my heart, and, you know, what?
Yeah.
This was not coerced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could just say that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it really puts an unfortunate amount of the onus on the survivor.
Right, right. And I think these predators really get into that dynamic of that, of knowing that when they're traumatizing somebody in this way and they're saying, well, this is what you're here for, you're willing to do this around that, really kind of programming and conditioning them in that way. And when you're in that trauma state, you're really going to absorb that information.
And interesting how very similar it looks to standard domestic violence, where it's, you know, it's the power and control, and on the surface, the person doing the perpetrating can look like a saint.
Well, and molester behavior as well, where there's the grooming process of really being kind of nice and being the person you can count on, especially if you're hungry and someone's giving you food. Oh, my gosh. And then being able to turn that relationship around to one of oppression and abuse.
Absolutely. We before we get too far behind, I'm going to take a break. I think when we get back, we should take a look at some of the stuff that Rape Crisis does, educating our youth to help prevent this from happening in the first place. You guys do a great job out in the community. All right, you've got it on KHUM, and I want to remind you that this is also a two-way conversation. If you would like to add to this conversation, have a question or a comment of this panel, by all means, call 786-KHUM. That's 786-5486, area code 707, of course. And we'll be right back with our panel discussion on our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign here on KHUM. And our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign continues. It's our two-hour roundtable discussion here on KHUM about sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. When we went into the break, we were talking about how we were going to be talking with Marianne about the all the prevention stuff that they do in the schools. But first, Megan had brought up an interesting point while we were in the break about grooming and cell phones and whatnot. And Megan, did you want to talk about that?
Sure. Thank you. So I've had males and females, both, that were teenage, like 15, 16, that were in a position that they were started to be groomed. They were given cell phones or computers or electronics and that sort of thing as part of that, starting to spend time with someone that was older and taking advantage of them. And I had a parent that called that said, hey, this doesn't really seem right. And I work with the families really intensively, and so that would be something pretty common. But that parents just really need to be aware of the things that their kids are doing. And if their kids are on Facebook, they need to have the password so that they can really check and see what their kids are doing online and just in general, so they're really aware and looking out to protect their kids.
So going a little more in-depth, what are you talking about with the cell phones? Is strangers giving their kids cell phones, basically? Or?
Yes. Making a connection, mm-hmm. giving a cell phone, and then they have a way to contact them. And maybe the family couldn't afford a cell phone, so then they have given them this present, which is all part of that grooming. And then going on to computers and, oh, well, why don't I come over to your house? I can help you hook up the computer. So just putting them in that dangerous situation.
Everybody has a cell phone except for me. So, but all youth have a cell phone mm-hmm. almost, or they want a cell phone. Sure, so course. That's an extreme vulnerability.
And a computer, of course.
Yeah.
And so does that sounds like that could be a gateway to either a sexual predator, or is it also a gateway to this kind of trafficking?
Who knows? All the above, probably. We were able to put a stop to the situation, luckily.
And you've seen this happen?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And then, Marianne, you were talking about the risky, what happens with younger girls.
Yeah, and the other thing that I wanted to add to what Megan was saying is, again, what we see in, like, the domestic violence situations, but also in these situations, is when you get that technology, and then there's all these advanced things around technology, like spyware and things like that, and then you're telling a young person that you know where they are, and they're over here, and why are they over here, and why are they, 'cause you can track them. Then that makes some may interpret that as, oh, this person really cares about me, is really paying attention to me, versus this person is really obsessing and stalking me. And those can be really confusing things when somebody's just coming into their world and exploring those kinds of relationships, you know. One of the things that we've had contact with is young people as young as 11 and 12. And part of what they get, predators come after them and offer, like, coming to parties, and they have parties at these hotels, and they haven't had much experience with alcohol or other drugs, and these predators are plying them with that. And then there's many multiple assailant sexual assaults that happen in those kinds of situations. And they're being told while being assaulted that, you know, this is what they wanted, this is what happens. And they often come out of that and talk to their peers and invite their peers to things like that, and all thinking it being presented to them, them being confused and traumatized, as if this is a coming of age kind of scenario situation rather than a brutal traumatic situation.
And unfortunately, they don't have life experience to draw upon to understand that this is not right.
Exactly, exactly. And then they're feeling culpable in it, so they're not going to be talking to trusted adults about it because they feel like they participated in it. And that's why it's really important for all of us to be involved in educating our youth and the family and being aware of these things so we can have real discussions about it. And that's why we promote dialogue in the schools at all different ages. We start with the preschoolers, but we go up through high school and do all age-appropriate curriculum identifying these kind of situations.
So let's talk about that, because that's really an important thing that Humboldt Rape Crisis does, mm-hmm. is going
North
to
Coast
the schools.
Rape Crisis Team.
I'm sorry, Rape Crisis Team. I get these. There's so many names. layered upon layer. You go to all the different area schools and talk with them about, you know, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you explain part of that curriculum?
Well, with the really young people, we're trying to set up safety guidelines with them, and all of our curriculums are very interactive, so we're promoting dialogue and participation, because that's what we want to work with the youth. And, you know, it's saying no and getting away and going to tell. And if you can't do any one of those things, at least exploring telling someone for the little ones. But then as youth come of age, we need to be talking about all kinds of things like sexual harassment and the hurting versus the flirting, and really have those intricate conversations, because they're getting information from our media that they're interpreting and their friends are interpreting a certain way, to actually have an open dialogue of what is, are you feeling hurt by this? Respecting and honoring your feelings versus only allowing yourself to have the feelings that somebody's telling you to have, like say the predator. You're wanting this. This is okay with you. I mean, that's typical kind of grooming kind of behavior. So having that open dialogue and having them connecting with their peers, like we start doing the sexual harassment in the junior high, 7th and 8th graders. I mean, we need to start having those conversations on the individual family levels and as a community. And that's what we try to do, is promote dialogue about this. Because when we do the presentation and do these different interactive exercises, we want those dialogues to continue with the youth among themselves.
What's really powerful about that educational experience in how many schools, I couldn't even count over the years how many schools that you've actually been able to be invited in year after year.
Absolutely.
After year.
How many years has this been going?
This has been going on since before I was with the agency. So I think it's like since 1984.
Wow. That's a really long time.
There's a time after the presentation and the role plays and all of that, where children can come and talk to one of the presenters, one of the educators.
Absolutely.
And actually tell somebody if they need to.
Mm-hmm.
And that is it's so that's so powerful right there, the invitation to be able to get help immediately is precious.
And that's one of the things, especially with really young people, but with older youth, to promote having a conversation. So one young person might hear a very playful conversation about sharing something that's funny in their lives. And so there isn't this stigma that then if somebody comes to talk to us, it's only about this abuse stuff. And that also gives youth more permission to have a conversation. And that's one of the things that we have, is we're mandated reporters when we're in the schools doing that education. But we let the youth know that if that's not where you are right now, then you can call our line anonymously, and we're not mandated reporters there. And we often get calls after someone we've been presenting in the classroom in the hotline, and they're calling. They go, well, we had you people coming in the classroom. They said this and that. This is what I experienced. Is this what you were talking about? So, again, traumatized people, it's hard for them. There's so much victim blaming out there. They're still asking, so being confused whether it's a sexual assault or not.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I assume, you know, when you come to the schools and you start bringing up some of this stuff, there are probably some questions going on in the minds of these youth, you know, saying, well, that sounds familiar, but that can't be in my situation because this person is a wonderful person.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounds familiar. But this is a wonderful person. But that sounds familiar. So there's some conflict going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be really tough, especially on a young person, to have that kind of conflict. What's, you know, what to do?
And that's why all the community involved, because maybe somebody won't call our crisis line about it, but if they had contact or heard somebody talking, they might connect with Raven or connect with somebody in probation that they trust. And that's part of why this network is so important, because we don't want to, you know, dictate where someone reaches out for support and help. It's where they feel trust and openness and a connection.
It's probably a good time to give the phone number for North Coast Rape Crisis Team.
Okay, the Humboldt hotline number is 707-445-2881, and the Del Norte hotline number is 707-445-2851. 24 hours, every minute of every day.
and anonymous.
Absolutely.
You don't have to say who. And also what I think is really amazing is that if this conversation is bringing up experiences from years and years ago, and you think, oh, I need to get over it, I need to get past it. We know from the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, Dr. Flitty and out of Kaiser Permanente in San Diego, people 50 years later are still struggling with the consequences of early sexual, physical, and emotional abuse. So that you can call that crisis line and talk to somebody, even if something happened to you a long time ago, and it's still inside of you, and it's still causing you not to be a happy person.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one thing we've talked about many times is that as human beings, we're really, really good at compartmentalizing pain. And we can just shut it off, wall it off, tuck it away. But eventually it starts to leak out in various different and manifest itself in very interesting, strange ways. And truly the best way is to actually just confront it, deal with it. Then you really can move forward. And as you said, even if it's 50 years ago that something happened, and you know, the thing is that you know, what you do in the schools is, you know, it's like people say, is this a new thing, has society changed, or do we now have all the unfortunately, no, we've had these kind of people forever. We're actually now dealing with it, which is fantastic. You know, it's you know, it's not necessarily that there's, you know, more instances of all this stuff. It's that there's now laws in place, organizations such as yours to help protect children. It just wasn't talked about before. It was always there.
Exactly.
I mean, our you know, many of our parents would say, you know, if someone offers you candy in the park, don't take it.
You know? Or a quarter to kiss somebody sitting in a truck.
Exactly. I mean, these are the things that we're taught as kids, and that's kind of an early version of this, really.
Absolutely.
What's appropriate, what's not appropriate. You know, it's, and, you know, it's kind of a spooky thing to think that this happens. And, of course, the folks that, the clientele of the Raven Project, you know, these are kids who have had it rough, right?
Yeah,
they've had a tough life to this point. And there is Amy and I were talking about this. There's a score system, right? Where you, like, if this happens, you know, you start counting up a score of four or more, then you are at risk. Why don't you explain what that is?
And that's part of Dr. Felitti's study with just a huge sample of Kaiser Permanente patients. So poverty really isn't even one of the variables. So you've got a score of possible seven from 0 to 7. And if you were sexually abused as a child, or physically abused, or emotionally abused, if your parents had mental health issues or substance abuse issues, or you watched your dad beat your mom, or you had a parent or caregiver in jail or prison. So all of these people did a sort of self-report and a really pretty extensive health inventory, and they indicated whether any of these things happened to them. So what was discovered is if there was a score of four or more, there were correlating other coping behaviors like problematic substance use, you know, mental health issues, physical health issues, pulmonary, lung problems, smoking, obesity. All of these things were correlated to adverse childhood experiences. So people don't just get over it. And then again, too, the caveat, lots and lots of people experience hard childhoods, difficult, challenging childhoods. They do not cope in ways that are considered, you know, destructive. They live good lives, happy lives. And we're not saying that this is, you know, that if you had an adverse childhood experience, this will happen.
This means you're more at risk.
You're more at risk for this happening. And if you cope in a way that relieves pain, it can cause other consequences. But what you're mainly trying to do is relieve the pain. That's what this study helps us understand.
And again, we are dealing with the topic of sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. If you're just tuning in, this is our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign. And our first half hour is down. This is a two-hour open panel discussion. We've got a wonderful group of guests here, which we will reintroduce in just a moment. And I want to remind you that If what we're talking about brings up any questions, anything that you would like to add to the conversation, any questions you might have of this panel that we've got assembled here, please call. You're certainly more than welcome to. You can give your name or you can be anonymous. I'm fine with either. Again, the number 786-KHUM. Digitally speaking, that is 786-5486. And that is, of course, area code 707. We're going to let our sponsors say a few quick words, and we'll be right back. All right, 35 minutes after 8 o'clock. You've got it on KHUM. It's our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign. I gave you the phone numbers, again, 786-KHUM, 786-5486. I also want to give you our email if you wanted to email a question or a thought, studio@khum.com. And since we've been yakking for a half hour, I think it's about time we introduced all of our guests, starting off with my partner in this event, Sherry Johnson.
Good morning, everybody. And I am the Director of Field Education in the Department of Social Work at Humboldt State and the Chair of the Humboldt County Domestic Violence Coordinating Council.
I'm Jackie Brennan, the Street Outreach Program Coordinator at the Raven Project with Youth Service Bureau and RCAA.
Marianne Hayes Mariani with the North Coast Rape Crisis Team.
Megan Gocher, Senior Probation Officer at Humboldt County Probation Department.
Fantastic. We got, like I said, we got a terrific panel here. And talking about the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County, again, it's a very, very broad topic. Now, one story that made the news recently that really shocked the nation took place in Cincinnati, Ohio, where I guess these women were being held as sex slaves for years and years. And I guess it was a neighbor that finally, one of the women got free, made some noise. Someone, a phone call was made, arrests were made, and they were let free. But
well, the one fellow was not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's one of those things that you know, people are like, how is that even possible? You know, how does something like that happen? But it all starts with what we're talking about right here is you know, these people who are at risk brought into a situation and become trapped, right? And and unfortunately, you know, as horrific as that was and shocking as it was, it's not an isolated thing. There's much more of that. That was unfortunately showing a very ugly tip of the iceberg. So that's what we're talking about today, and hoping to prevent this sort of thing from happening to the youth of Humboldt County. I mean, this is a nationwide issue, of course, and there have been lots of things that are happening, new actions by law enforcement taking place to help deal with this. But you know, the problem is that there are still a lot of kids at risk out there,
and there needs to be a lot of change at multiple levels. And I think, you know, that these stories in the media, they kind of explode, and there's, you know, a lot of hubbub and chatter about it, and, you know, we need to do something, and then it sort of recedes or it gives way to the next episodic horrific thing that's happening. And we lack then the ability to really follow through and really look at what do we need to do at the family level, what do we need to do at schools and at the policy levels. And that's why, as hard as it is to talk about this, we need to talk about it, and we need to raise awareness in everyday concrete ways. Policy stuff seems a little bit out of our reach in terms of legislation, but we really want to commend the California legislature for taking this on and continuing to keep it in focus. So maybe we could talk a little bit about kids and what we might want to look for if we know of a child, or there's, you know, you're a school social worker and you're wondering about a kid. Or you know a neighbor, or you see a kid just, you know, kind of isolated and hanging around. Maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the things that people would want to look for and some of the things that they could do.
Okay. I think that it's really important for all of us as a community to inform ourselves about this issue, because I think children and youth are not going to be holding up that red flag and letting it, because they're not understanding what's happening to them. They're confused.
They're in the
uncomfortable. Middle of it. Yeah. And they're being told it's something other than it's not by the predators, you know. So, and they have limited life experience to discern all that sometimes. And I think that by seeing someone isolate, you know, changing their behavior, putting out there to connect with people. And I think sometimes, like in the different systems things that make it hard for youth to get over, is they're not understanding what's happening. They may feel like they've done something wrong to prompt this attention. And so it's really hard for them to maybe go to their teacher, or go to their counselor, or somebody official about this. And that's why I think places like Raven House, our organization, other hotline numbers, you know, to that where somebody can call and maybe check things out, or also talk to their peers that they trust, someone that they trust, and maybe say, you know, that whole adage thing of I have a friend, that to explore that stuff, because being all alone and isolated can only help them remain trapped in that situation. And sometimes just checking out the other avenues is really important. So really, I think all of us, community and systems people, need to be paying attention to what's changing about this youth that we're working about, and then offering lots of options and not maybe needing to label stuff, because it may not be clear to us, because there's all the person's confused and they're not going to be disclosing things right away because they don't even understand what's going on. So for us to just heighten our awareness about the changes in behavior and all the resources that are out here so we can direct the youth to it.
People outside of this often ask, you know, why in the world would a youth be attracted to, you know, a situation like that where they're being put into danger? The interesting thing is we most of us have this image in our mind of these predators as these big hairy ogres that, you know, are very obvious when you look at them. But not necessarily. I mean, the thing is, there can be some very, very attractive, nice, wonderful things, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel of a tough life. It's like, oh, I can go here, and I can check this out, and I can do this, and this person's offering me for, you know, really for nothing to a place to stay, or, you know, a warm meal, or a phone. This is fantastic, you know, and, it's how it starts, of course.
Right. And we're all human beings, and sure, we all want that human contact. So if somebody has things that's going on in their life, and they feel really isolated, they're really vulnerable to that. And that's part of the thing that we can have discussions with the youth in our world, whether it be in our workplace or in our personal life with our children's friends or whatever, to be having these conversations that they're not necessarily alone about this, and just putting that information out there, even if you're not sure what's going on, that it's not their fault, and that working on not judging them and trying to assist them the way they need to be assisted.
It appears that we do have someone calling, so if our panel can put on their headphones, and let's go to the phone and see if this works. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. I just want to say how happy I am that you're having a topic on this issue. Mm-hmm. Very important.
Absolutely. Is there something that you wanted to add to the conversation?
Well, definitely. I just, you know, she said something earlier that really, really just sparked something. I mean, especially in women and, you know, the term she used, survival sex. And I tell you, you can just see it on some faces, locally. I mean, you know, the looks on some faces of some youth that come off of a hill, even, and it's just, you know, I've had these conversations with the girls, and it's very real and it's very out there, and I hope you do more shows on this subject, because, like I said, it's very real, and I've had the conversations with the girls.
Absolutely, and thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you, too.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for taking the energy and the time to have those conversations. That's so valuable.
I always will. I'm totally there, you know, and I always will be for the kids, man. That's the way it should be.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And again, I want to remind folks that this is an open community conversation. If you've got a question or a comment, 786-KHUM. 786-5486. You can also email something in studio@khum.com. We were talking about, you know, what makes it so attractive. The successful sexual predator or recruiter, if you will, is successful because they know what to say to people who need to hear certain things. People in desperate situations, if you say the right things, turn on the right charm, you use the right verbiage, you show a kind, a kindness, you've opened the door.
I think it's important to say that it's not always an older, scary person, that we do have youth that are acting as pimps and prostituting out youth as well. And so that's an important thing. I've had a youth that had written on their arm property of someone written on their arm, and that was a youth, and that was like 14 or 15.
Man.
And I think the literature also, again, you know, some research is helpful, the vulnerability is mainly around homelessness. I mean, and then also things that have happened in that person's family or caregivers or didn't happen. But a lot of the youth have physical and mental health issues. They're living with physical and mental health challenges. Post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety disorders result from being displaced and abused. So you have youth that are, you've got these really skilled and creative individuals meeting their economic and other needs in a really heinous way. And you've got a culture that says, really, you have to have your needs met either by your family or you work or otherwise that we don't know quite what happens to you. And then vulnerability of the youth themselves, who maybe have survived all kinds of terrible things already and are at greater risk and think there's no other way out.
Right, because one thing that we have to understand, it's like, not all families are wonderful, great, loving families. Not all families provide what the children need. And those people are, again, at more risk of someone else providing those needs and opening the door to issues.
Right. And not to blame, you know, families who are struggling and many people who have experienced trauma and oppression and violence, then continue that cycle on into the next generation without intervention.
A poverty thing. It's right. It's meeting other needs. Right. Absolutely. So
Marianne, did
yes.
you
well I just wanted to add about it not being a poverty thing that I think that even well-to-do families are sometimes we can be so engaged in what we're doing, getting all the things accomplished, that we miss the signs that a youth in our family is very depressed, maybe bullying's occurring. All kinds of things are happening in our world. Absolutely. And their world is pretty, very sophisticated. And I don't know that I would know how to navigate that at that age at that developmental level. And they're all dealing with that all the time. And I think I really appreciate that you're bringing up that it's across all lines, because any individual can start feeling isolated for lots of different reasons. Even if they're in a well-to-do and seemingly not abusive home, they can feel that isolation, and that's what makes them vulnerable to these situations.
Absolutely. There's many, many different kinds of profiles. I mean, you know, you hear about this, you know, where you have a youth from a very well-to-do family, you know, winds up in prostitution, and it's like, how in the world could this happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, certain needs were not being met. They may have gotten, you know, all the food they needed, the Mercedes that they maybe needed or didn't need, you know, but a certain emotional connection maybe wasn't there, and boom, that was the gateway. There was the crack, the door that was open that was ready to be seized upon. So there's lots of different ways to get in on there, and there's one thing that seems to be common throughout the thing. And we have to take a break, but when we get back, we can talk about it. And that's that being trapped, trapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear that always. You know, how are these people trapped? And there's lots of different ways that people do get trapped, and we'll talk about that in a bit. And again, I want to remind you that the lines of communication are two-way. You can certainly give us a call and let us know what's on your mind and share some thoughts, comments. The number again, 786-KHUM, that's 786-5486, area code 707, in case you didn't know. Also, you can certainly just email a question or thought, studio@khum.com. And it is 8:53. It's our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign, our 18th here on KHUM. And this week's topic is the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. It's hard to believe that we're nearly through with our first hour, and there's so much yet to talk about. And again, I encourage you to call in with your questions or comments at 786-KHUM, at 786-5486. You can also email studio@khum.com. When we went into the break, we were talking about that feeling of being trapped. Sometimes, you know, I hear from people who are not in it, and they say, trapped, why don't they just walk away?
Or call somebody, or call the police.
Mm-hmm. And there's lots of complicated reasons. Mm-hmm. Anyone want to touch on what some of those complicated reasons are?
Well, some of who the predators are targeting can be people who are immigrating here and maybe don't have any documentation here. And we know of youth that have the promise of having jobs and everything like that, but then have been forced into sex working. And if those are named as their hurdles, and maybe they were promised to, and they don't know all the logistics of how to become documented and all that kind of thing, that they're promised all that stuff, and then the person is holding them hostage on that and telling them that they'll go to jail or prison or whatever if they aren't under their protection. And people don't know how to navigate all that. They're going to feel really trapped and no place to go.
I want to make a plug for transition age youth right now. They're on the I Street office. They have helped youth with the Dream Act, like pursuing that. And they have drop-in hours every Wednesday from 2 to 5. And that's the transition age youth office. I believe it's 555 I Street. It's right across from Public Health.
Fantastic. Well, that's a problem, is that a lot of people just don't know what their resources are. And that's
And it also gets complicated because there are limited resources up here, but then it also happens that other people are being threatened. Their family members even if somebody's from here locally, their family members or friends or the other people in their situation with them could be being threatened that if you don't comply with this, then this person's going to get hurt. And that entraps a lot of people. Because if this person's willing to do these things, better believe that they're willing to harm somebody else in some all even lethal way.
Right. And physical abuse can be, if the other subtle or even direct manipulation doesn't work, then the threats to hurt others, but also then we're getting into physical violence. And that is horribly, the feeling of being trapped in that is desperate.
Absolutely. As we said, there are many ways. Now, one methodology of luring youth into like pornography, prostitution, sexual slavery that I have heard of was the promise of a modeling career. You know, it's like, you know, this is, you know, there's this really high-end model in Berlin or wherever who really wants, looking for some really wonderful, to model some beautiful clothing and whatnot. Now, there's going to have to be some jobs at the beginning that you may not like, but you're just model nude for just a little while, and then eventually you're going to be getting this, and there's trapped in this.
And there's also things like technology and everything like that of people drug facilitated sexual assault, taking pictures of that. That person is feeling culpable because maybe they started imbibing in whatever the drug was, alcohol or other drugs. They're taking pictures of that episode, and then they're blackmailing them that they're going to show that to family members or friends or put it on YouTube or whatever if they don't comply with these other things, you know. And they don't have to be sophisticated in having all these cameras. They can just do that on their phones now.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of spooky. So let's see here. Megan, when we were in the break, you were talking about you wanted to make sure you that we touched on stuff that was happening right here in Humboldt County. There's some big stuff happening here.
Correct, yeah.
And also to mention that, you know, obviously we're thinking of young girls in this, but it's not just girls, it's boys too.
Yes. Boys and girls were also mandated reporters in the probation department, and I've made referrals to Rape Crisis for boys as well as girls. But locally, we have the local casinos have had some trouble with prostitution. They've gotten the Department of Justice in, and that's been able to shut down the prostitution, but it's nice that they're very aware of that situation and been able to put a stop to that. But we still have that happening at some of the local hotels, doing some prostitution, running some prostitution out of the hotels. And we have youth that have gotten STDs that have contracted chlamydia and gonorrhea. We had a youth that passed away of AIDS. Wow. And so it's happening in Humboldt County for sure.
Now, these hotels and motels, are they complicit in this, or is this just happening without their knowledge, or what?
Who knows? I mean, it would be hard not to notice, I think.
I would imagine that there's no acknowledgement of their knowing it, but yeah, I would agree with Megan. It would be hard not for them not to notice that. But I also want to emphasize the sex working, that's the venue where most, whether male, female, any age, any gender, that oftentimes in those situations, those people are being trafficked. They didn't consent to enter into that situation. You know, they were forced into that situation or coerced into that situation. And that's a thing that we as a community need to reframe for ourselves, so then we respond in a whole different way rather than criminalizing their behavior, knowing that they're stuck and trapped.
And the trapped cannot just be a physical kind of, or even a physical threat of violence trapped, but trapped by our own thoughts and our own inability to see that this really wasn't a choice. And what happens to our self-esteem, what happens to our sense of core self when we've been exposed to these kinds of experiences over and over again is a feeling of worthlessness, and that then I deserve to have this happen. And if I'm being told that, I'm also then not able to help myself because I don't believe I deserve to be helped.
I really appreciate your saying that, because I think that's the other thing that sometimes gets in the way of our community being more open in their responses, because the survivor isn't going to be presenting themselves as "I've been victimized in this way." That they're not; they don't have that clarity at that point in time, and they're dealing with survival. And so, examples of that are on the national level, or something like Elizabeth Smart. A lot of the systems people were really confused about her. Like, why did it take her several hours? Here she was in a safe place, but it still took her a couple hours to acknowledge that she was who she was, because she was dealing with that safety issue and fear, and she had been trapped, and she had been programmed, and all those things. And that just doesn't, it's not a switch that just turns off. So they're not going to be presenting in the way we would want them to be presenting. We need to change our viewpoint of that.
That's an interesting point, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. This is KHUM, Cutton, Eureka, Arcata, and Willow Creek, streaming on the web at khum.com. It's our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign. We're talking about the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. The Elizabeth Smart case was one of those ones, again, that caught a lot of national attention. And you were right, confused a lot of people. It's like, you know, this took place over a long period of time. And, you know, it's this, you know, she was being paraded out in public. You know, it's like, why didn't she just run away? You know, but you were saying that there is, you know, there is a type of like programming conditioning, if you will, where after enough time goes by, what happens?
Well, they start believing all the lies that the predator is saying to them. They're in captivity. They're not getting their needs met, but anyone but this person. So they're very isolated. So that trauma bond starts to happen. Mm-hmm. Because even if somebody's being causing brutality in your life and violating you, if they're also meeting your basic human needs, there's that conflict there. And then, you know, and then trauma, we know how we integrate that in a very chaotic way. So it's very challenging for somebody to then really, how they're surviving is by trying to figure out what they can be connecting with this person, how they can be connecting with this person. And then all of a sudden, somebody's trying to tell them, okay, you need to totally disconnect from them. That's not going to happen easily. It's going to be a transition. It's going to need lots of support, because part of what happens that predator does to them is really condition them of, you are alone and I'm the only one that's taking care of you. I'm the only one that really cares about you. I'm the only one that this. All your needs are from me. And when that keeps happening to you, when you're being brutalized, you can't, any of us can't help but take that information in and really own it, because we're trying to survive.
And of course, the lesson of that one instance can be translated into the entire thing. It's like, you know, how can an entire group of people be coerced into a lifestyle that is contrary to how they were raised, and continue doing it. It's that same kind of thing. I mean, after enough time, this is the new life. This is the new normal.
We have, just as the human species, just an amazing, powerful ability to adapt. And we can adapt to really good circumstances, and we can adapt to horrific circumstances. But in order to survive, we will adapt. And when the episodic niceness, it's not, the person's not always cruel, maybe 95% of the time cruel, or cruel when needed, but then just that one little, then you get a cupcake or you get some kind of little piece of jewelry or something, then it's like that intermittent niceness that you think, oh, well, maybe it's going to be okay.
It's as we've talked about before, it's very similar to what we've talked about in the past in domestic violence, where there's the power and the control and the brutality and the niceness combination, you know, the brutality with the apology and the gift and the, you know, and the niceness. And it's like, you know, loss of control and
used, abused, and confused.
Absolutely. It's an interesting, you know, and scary thing that this can happen. And of course, if we're dealing with youth, even more impressionable, because you don't have your life experience to draw upon to say, wait a minute, something is a little bit off.
And really, oh, Jackie, were you going to say something?
I think also that for youth in particular, I mean, we're using this word survival sex, and you don't have your life experience to draw on either, but a lot of times you also don't have resources to draw on, especially if you're a homeless youth and you're on your own. So I think that's another place where that's an added risk factor for youth, is that it's not just about their emotional confusion. It's also about their very real lack of resources that they have to stay safe physically at night. And their youth are making choices based on their circumstances that they're in a lot of cases. That I've seen. And I think that at the Raven Project, what we try to do is we hire youth directly out of the target population of runaway homeless youth. That's what we say. So we run a peer education program that tries to put information and empower youth into knowing what is safe and what is risky and how to reduce the harm and risks that they might be exposed to throughout their lives and at that particular point in their life. So the youth can talk to each other, which they often do, and reach out to each other and be able to identify things in each other's lives that might be risky and then help each other to make safer decisions.
And it looks like we've got a caller on the line, so if Hannah could put your headphones back on. Oh, no, apparently not. They bailed out. All right. So, if you are calling and we don't have a panel of operators standing by, it's just me. If you are calling and want to get in on this conversation, just let it ring until we get a chance to put you on. Again, the number is 786 KHUM. That's 786-5486. Okay. And you can also send in a question via email. That would be fine. So, I'm sorry, you were talking.
Am I talking again now?
You may if you'd like. You may if you'd like.
I think anyway. I was finished.
Okay. Again, the topic that we're dealing with today is the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. And as you can tell in this past hour and 10 minutes, that takes many different forms. It goes in lots of different directions.
And we might want to just spend just a minute talking about who might be at greater risk for sexual exploitation. So if you are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, you may actually be have an increased risk for becoming sexually exploited due to the overrepresentation of homeless youth in population. There's a lot of LGBT youth in the homeless population, so you're at greater risk. And the marginalization that comes from sexual orientation oppression, and youth who've been exposed to abuse and neglect. Of course, 70% of homeless youth are victims of all types of abuse, physical, verbal, sexual, and or neglect. And a link has been directly made to the risk for sexual exploitation. Youth of color, 83% of youth under the age of 18 arrested for prostitution-related offenses identified as non-white. Young girls are disproportionately victimized by sexual exploitation. Girls under the age of 18 were over 14 times more likely to be arrested for prostitution than their male peers. So that's why the policy change is so important, and we want to commend Alameda County for having a program that is helping youth transition from having survived this kind of exploitation into, you know, another life. A Los Angeles City Councilman finally getting it and going, wait, these children are not the troubled youth, you know, and I think that's been easy to just dissuade any responsibility, because you can just say, oh, well, you know, these youth are those kinds of kids, and you don't need to do anything to help them. So once policies really starts changing, just on a local level, state and national level, and resources come as a result, and at least in the Alameda program, it had only been funded to for a certain time. Now it's been extended to 2017, so something's working there.
But I also appreciate what Jackie was saying, is we got to keep having these conversations and then having them in our homes and talking with youth just about this so that they can be more informed with their peers and having those conversations and the resources, because they are going to be talking to their peers before they're talking to most adults. So I think that's really important to acknowledge. And like the woman who called in earlier, a member of the community willing to have these conversations with the youth. We need to keep building on that.
Right. We need to take a break. But one thing I want to touch on as well is something that's unique to Humboldt County is that we have a good chunk of our area that's very isolated. And there is also a large, not necessarily legal, agricultural components going on there, and there is some abuse going on in that area as well. We want to touch on that first. Again, we need to take a quick break, And again, I want to acknowledge and thank the sponsors of our Friday Funnies campaign, which we normally have on Fridays. But of course, every once per year, we take a break from the Friday Funnies to give you this Stop the Violence campaign. So that is what we are doing right now. So thanks to them. And again, the phone number, if you want to get in on this conversation, is 786-KHUM at 786-5486. You can also send in a question via email, studio@khum.com. All right, it's 14, almost 15 minutes after 9 o'clock. It's our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign, our 18th here at KHUM. And 45 minutes left of our conversation, and you can certainly be part of it. We're dealing with the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. And when we went into the break, we were talking about something that happens here in Humboldt County. We've got, Southern Humboldt has got a lot of isolated areas, a lot of big growing operations. And, we have heard that there has been, some sexual slavery things going on there. And with that kind of isolation, again, isolation is one of those things that really plays into the hands of any sexual predator or abuser.
And, it's impossible to know to what extent this is really happening. We know that there's been, again, a media story about it. And even if it's not where younger women or girls are being held at gunpoint, it's sort of, again, that vulnerability issue. If you're trimming and you don't have any other place to go and you lack other kinds of resources, that you may feel like this is your only option. So that I think probably is more common than you actually physically cannot, mm-hmm. escape. But then we really don't know. We really don't know. And I would have not believed the extent of environmental damage being done by Marijuana Grows until the actual research had been done and people have been pointing out how the destruction to the environment is taking place by people coming from out of the area. I feel defensive about our local people. I don't think any of our mom and pop growers were doing that, but we really just don't know. And again, the secrecy around anything that has to do with sexuality, and especially in terms of sexual exploitation, keeps people trapped.
Of course, and of course, there's secrecy just in general in a grow operation. And as you said, there's so many different kinds of grow operations in Humboldt County. There are, we all know of the small little ma and pa. Things where it's like, hey, we're able to keep the farm now because of the little thing we're doing here, to the large industrial grow operations that are causing some severe damage, and but with the isolation and with it already being off the grid, being illegal, it's just one more easier way of opening the door to some kind of exploitation.
Plus another hurdle for the survivors too, I think, because that's another thing is I know I've worked with survivors that aren't wanting to deal with reporting any situation or violation because you're fearing then that would give up the grow situation, and they're not wanting to be a rat. They're wanting to be a member of this community, and they're wanting to have that financial resource, which there are limited of those around here, and so people do make their livelihood that way. And so that's a hurdle of speaking about it, because then the challenges is that, well, can they just deal with the assault situation and not deal with all these other things? And then if all these other things come out, then they will be marked as a person who, right. All the different derogatory names of somebody calling somebody out.
It's just one more layer of isolation that makes it easier for someone to take advantage of your sex for survival.
Right.
All kinds of different things that, unfortunately, we don't hear of most of what the issues are. Mm-hmm. Just a few have come to the surface, and made sexy headlines.
And again, to speak to that, it's not like targeting the grow operations. It's just a naming that this happens in all aspects of our society.
Absolutely.
All different classes.
All right. Yeah. We need to be clear about that.
Yeah.
But it just makes it, it's just one more hurdle, one more layer that, someone who's having to survive that has got to get past to deal with it.
And the isolation could be very great, physical isolation, being far removed. There is usually oftentimes someone that's armed that is guarding, and there's often dogs. So you would have a lot of barriers to getting to help.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times no one knows you're there or where you are, and you may be hundreds or thousands of miles from any friends or family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very,
especially
very
a young person coming here to work.
Right, right.
So... getting back to the youth that that Jackie that you deal with, what are certain things that I guess in the stories in the years that you've been dealing with this that that the youth find attractive, that the things that they are drawn to? And I guess the reason I want to mention that is show it up as a red flag to anyone who may be in this situation, what to look for. What are certain things that become attractive to people in the situations that you deal with?
I would say basic needs, shelter. And I'm not sure what else besides shelter. That's a huge one. And employment resources, economic resources.
And here's the interesting thing is, some people, I'm sure a lot of people, probably most people who are offering shelter are doing it out of the kindness of their heart. How does someone in this situation differentiate someone who's being kind and someone who's taking advantage?
That's a really big question. That's a huge question.
I actually,
go for it.
Well, I'm not sure that people can tell the difference between someone who's sincere and who's not.
Because it probably starts off exactly the same. I guess it's when, at some point, most people have a little thing go off in their head and say, something's odd. Something's a little odd. But, depending on your situation, you may be willing to ignore that oddity because of your situation.
And sometimes there's not that thing that goes, because this person is pretty charismatic and pretty good at what they do. And I think something that I offered people but it's hard when you're in a dire situation. You don't typically have time to check things out, but maybe explore with your community. Have you ever had experiences with this person? Because those are the actions. And if you know someone who's known someone and what their experience has been with them, but sometimes you're in such a desperate situation that you don't have the time to explore that. And that doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong. It means that this person's targeting you because you're in a desperate situation.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough. And one thing that I heard a story recently on NPR that I thought was rather interesting, and it's kind of like the reverse of this. It takes place in Canada, I guess. I don't know if you heard about this. Some parents who adopted children who were of a different race than them were being, and this happened like multiple times, being turned in for being predators because they, the children didn't match their skin color or whatever, and it was like that was such a bizarre thing, and this was taking place in Canada.
So the parents weren't adopting these children as victims.
No,
they were just adopting the children who were a different ethnicity.
Different ethnicity. Since they were treating them nice and with these this white couple, there was like phone calls were made and authorities were called out, and it was an interesting thing. It was like, they were saying, well, Should we back off on this? And the, I guess basically the I guess the upshot of it was they would rather have some a few misidentified things because it was obviously cleared up pretty easily everyone move forward and then let things go by. Like I'm sure the smart case, there were probably many people who saw something that seemed a little odd, but just didn't want to say anything.
Right.
It was like, And that could have probably been taken care of perhaps a while ago. Because that went on for years, didn't it?
The smart, I think she was in captivity for 9 months.
Oh, was it 9 months?
But
okay.
Then, you know, J.C. Dugard, that was decades,
years.
You know. So, yeah. These are the ones that we hear about.
Know about.
There are plenty that we don't hear about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there like a typical Raven client or a typical client at NCRCT or probation? Or, you know, can we talk a little bit about sort of what happens to folks that would be, so that they would be needing Raven services or probation or the typical family, or is it just all over the place?
For the program I run, it's kids that are at very high risk of removal from the home. But that goes across the board to all variations of families. And then, of course, they're in probation, so they've committed some kind of a crime to be in probation. But I will use this time to say I looked up for the last year specifically, and I know it's longer, but I looked up this past year. We have not had any probation youth that were booked into the juvenile hall for prostitution or for soliciting. So at least we aren't furthering that victimization.
That's so great to hear.
Yes. And so the stories that I've told have come from youth because I do work with them intensively for typically a year or so. So those are stories that they have shared.
And speaking of sharing stories, I would, while we have a little bit of time left, and it's a big thing to ask, if there is anyone out there listening who has been through this as a youth and maybe has gotten past it to the other side, and if you would be willing to call in and share your experience, how, you know, what led you to where you were being victimized, to how you got out of it and became a survivor of this, it's a tough thing to ask, but your share would also be a huge gift to anyone who might be listening who could benefit from it. So I'll just put that out there, and I know it's a lot to ask. The number again is 786-KHUM. At 786-5486. And again, if anyone just wants to share via email, that would be studio@khum.com.
And I think it's also important for us to recognize that when I'm thinking about some of the survivors that we've worked with, is that there's not a right or a wrong way to handle this, because there's lots of failures in the system. So reporting it always isn't the right way to go. It isn't a useful way for them to go. And I've talked to youth survivors where they're in a situation where they're being violated, maybe by a member of their family. And when they hear about the legal process, the no guarantees about those situations, then they're measuring, you know, what they're dealing with, what they have grown and learn how to deal with their abusive situation versus the unknown of what the system might do and what that might do to their family or whatever. And then they choose for themselves, is I'm going to tolerate this for now because this is what I figured out how to tolerate. I don't know how to deal with that and all the other things that might come with that, betrayal of other family members, all those kinds of things. And then that, for some survivors, they can, once they can become emancipated and on their own, they can figure out really healthy ways of dealing with their issues and growing. And for some survivors, because there had been so much abuse and toxic nature of their growing up years, that it makes it more challenging to them and they're more vulnerable to these predators, and then it's like this situation of just surviving one trauma after another trauma after another trauma. And we just need to be recognizing that as a community, that be aware that there isn't just this right way to do things. Our society isn't totally equipped and doesn't have the right answers for things. And so it's very complicated. And for all of us to make space for that is really important.
And that's where it's wonderful to have a resource such as North Coast Rape Crisis Team for people to call, not be judged, just as a sounding board. Give the number again.
The number here in Humboldt is 707-445-2881. Every minute of every day.
Fantastic. And is there a number for Raven?
Yes. Our number is 443-7099. And if you don't connect with us at the drop-in center, youth can call 444-CARE. That's, I think, 2-2-7-3-4-4-4-CARE. And that's the number to the 24-hour residential Youth Service Bureau teen shelter.
Okay, and Megan, it looked like you had a question or something you wanted to say.
I do, because I've had a couple of youth that have been victimized, but they would have had to testify against their accuser physically, rather than do it like pre-recorded.
Right.
And so they haven't done that because it was just too traumatizing. But then that also meant they weren't eligible for resources through victim witness or some other resources.
Right.
And so just trying to figure out another way that they can do that rather than just to further victimize them by being in the courtroom with their...
Exactly. And I think that's another thing, like resources like ours, we're not mandate reporters when we're not in the classroom. So we can do counseling, although our services are free and confidential. We have a lot of demands on those services, so they're waiting lists. But we do check in with people on a regular basis, and we can look for other resources for that person. But I think it's really important for us to respect that they weren't able to do that. And also, again, there being no guarantees, because we have lots of youth survivors that are thinking about exploring the reporting process, but we can't promise that that person is going to be arrested and that they're going to be safe from that person. And they know how this person strategizes and how dangerous it could be for them, and also maybe fearing how their family might not be able to handle the situation and then side with the perpetrator, because a lot of youth their credibility is in question. And that's unfortunate. It's something our society needs to look at. But oftentimes, you know, if an adult says one thing and a youth says another, people are going to choose to believe the adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be quite a problem, and also part of the abuse of power.
That comes
into play. It's our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign, our 18th here at KHUM. We're dealing with the sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. We're down to our final half hour, so if you've resisted calling in, this is probably one of the last chances to do so. Again, it's 786-KHUM. That's 786-5486. And you can also, of course, email any questions you might have, studio@khum.com. And it looks like we're in our last few minutes of our panel discussion dealing with sexual exploitation of children and youth in Humboldt County. It's KHUM's Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign. And I think enough time has gone by. We need to go around the room and introduce everybody. Starting off with my partner for this campaign for the last 18 years, Sherry Johnson. Give us your credentials, please.
I am the Director of Field Education in the Department of Social Work at Humboldt State University and the Chair of the Humboldt County Domestic Violence Coordinating Council, which is a partnership of individuals and agencies created and designed and dedicated to educating about domestic violence and ultimately preventing it.
I am Jackie Brennan, Street Outreach Program Coordinator at the Raven Project of the Youth Service Bureau and Redwood Community Action Agency.
Marianne Hayes, Marianne, North Coast Rape Crisis Team.
Megan Gocher, Senior Probation Officer with Humboldt County Probation.
All right, fantastic. And so we really have a little bit of time left. And again, I encourage anyone to call in if they wanted to at 786-KHUM. That's 786-5486. And one thing we were talking about off air, and I'd like to throw this back to Jackie, is who comes to Raven?
Well, Sherry had asked, I guess, what the typical Raven client is, and I don't know that there really is a typical Raven client that we serve or that comes to Raven. We try to be a safe space for all youth, so really any youth who is looking for a place to go that is safe can come to Raven. Like we've been talking about, all young people, it's not based on class or race or ethnicity. They're all young people are vulnerable to sexual exploitation, and we are going to try to make a safe space for all young people at Raven Project. So we work with a lot of LGBTQ youth. We work with a lot of local youth. We work with a lot of youth who are traveling through the area and just stopping by, or maybe they stop by every time they're in Humboldt County. People come just once to check it out, and sometimes they come every day. So it's a pretty good mix. And we have groups specific to people's interests. So there's a girls' space group every Wednesday from 6:30 to 8:30. And that's just young women and girls who are female-identified people. They meet for 2 hours and play games, do social things, talk. A queer coffee house group Tuesdays from 6:30 to 8:30. That's open to any youth who would identify as LGBTQ or an ally who wants to come and hang out in a safe space. And art workshop on Fridays after our drop-in, 4:30 to 6:30, and a drum circle group on Sundays, 5:30 to 7:30. So there's something for everyone. And our drop-in, you know, youth can shower, use our laundry facility. We have hot food and meals and snacks and TV and video games and computer and internet access and peer mentors that can help youth with employment resources, job search, housing search, all kinds of drop-in resources, as well as free clothes. We have a free clothing room, too.
And hygiene products.
And hygiene products as well.
So just I'm curious, and I don't know if you even have this data or maybe any idea about it, of what percentage of clientele at Raven would you say have some experience with sexual exploitation?
I don't know that I can say the percentage at Raven, but I would assume that it is consistent with national estimates, and I think that's something like 40 to 70%, something
wow.
like that.
That is a stunning number. It's a stunning number.
And the risk for sexual exploitation goes up with certain factors, and LGBTQ youth are at a greater risk. And I believe that also youth of color are at a greater risk. And I think that youth that are living in that youth that are isolated are at risk for, they're at a greater risk for multiple harms. The more isolated someone is in a community, the greater the risk that they have. So to have a safe space where all youth are welcome and they can find a peer group that is accepting of them, that alone decreases their risk for exploitation or other potentially harmful activities that they could be doing, as long as that peer group doesn't include heavy pressure to engage in those activities.
Exactly. Wow. One thing we were also talking about a little bit off air was, let's say you know someone or there's a family member that you feel is at risk or you feel that is being sexually exploited somehow. What resources do you have? What do you do?
Well, one of the things is you can offer that they call our 24-hour crisis line, because once again, somebody, and many people do, call our line anonymously and say, what if this is happening? What can be done? What are the resources? Where can we go? How can I help that individual? Sometimes it's the survivor calling, and sometimes it's a loved one calling for them. And so we're at a place to talk to them about safety plans, the possibilities of what could happen with a reporting process or not reporting, how to take care of themselves medically and physically without reporting, just exploring their different options and choices. And granted, like Jackie was saying, for some youth, there are very, very limited choices because of the violations that they've experienced and the isolations that they are in. And that's where we're coming from, is we want to be real with them and really hear their truth and then respond to what and problem solve with them, because we don't have the answer. They are the expert in their lives, and we want to respect that and hear that and not judge that and just offer options and a listening ear.
On the KHUM website, there is a place to be able to go and do some interaction with resources.
Yeah, it's terrific.
So if this issue isn't particular the issue, but there are other issues, or you just want to see what possible resources might be available, you can check out the KHUM website and look at the page for resources.
Right. All you have to do is just click on the Stop the Violence logo. It'll take you to this year's campaign. At the very top, there is some red text, and basically this is our interactive resource. Click on that, and basically it'll ask you a series of questions, and based upon your answers, point you in the right direction. And there's lots of resources out there, luckily.
And then I if you aren't ready to do that, say you're listening and this, or you know somebody, or you're listening and you're just not ready to even make a phone call, we have a healing breakfast on November 22nd, 8 to 10, at the Eureka Women's Club. And there'll be all kinds of resource tables there, people there, pastries, music.
Let's talk about some of the resource tables, because there's lots.
Yeah, their North Coast Rape Crisis Team, of course, will be there. Hopefully Raven will be there. The Emma Center, the Department of Health and Human Services Health Education Program, Suicide Prevention, which is an amazing program doing amazing work, Two Feathers Native American Family Services, WISH, the Healing Quilt Project, of which Oceana will be on November 20th to talk about that, and just, you know, hopefully domestic violence, Humboldt Domestic Violence Services, and the DA Victim Witness Program hopefully will be there too. So lots and lots of resources, a room full of wonderful, caring people, and just to be in that room, even if you don't say anything to anybody, just to be there, we would welcome you.
And it really is a great place to have all these resources in one place, kind of your one-stop shop, if you will. Plus, in addition to that, we're going to have some wonderful live music. We have an all-star vocal group put together just for this called the Heartbeat Quartet, and they're going to be performing. We've got yummy pastries being provided by Valentini Baking Company, who have come to the plate every year. We've asked them. Signature Coffee, providing the KHUM Blend coffee for us to drink copious amounts of that. And, of course, this is all free. Free of charge, open to the public, 8 until 10 at the Women's Club on J Street in Eureka. It's a wonderful location for this. We've bounced around various different places throughout the years, but I think we've found a home in that location.
Too.
It just feels, it's a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And one of the things that you talked about, suicide prevention, very important, because in this feeling of being trapped, if you are trapped, if there is really no way out, unfortunately, that's an option that sometimes is exercised.
Probably a great link there exists, and it isn't. It's you want the pain to go away. You want to get out. I mean, that's, you know, again, a permanent solution to what might be a temporary situation. But just being able to talk to somebody about how you're feeling about all of this is the really, really the first step. Just being able to be open to believe that there could be a change. That is, it takes a lot to be able to do that. It takes courage to be able to do that. But there, that other side is there.
Sherry, I know you've got lots of data in front of you, and I don't know if you have this, but do we have data as to the numbers of youth in this country who are victims of sexual exploitation?
Well, I think we probably have that
Well, other than the Federal Bureau of Investigation saying it's epidemic proportion, I wouldn't have in the United States. So 300,000 youth are either victims or at risk of becoming victims. 60% of these victimized children are homeless, and it's an epidemic.
And our stats are 1 in 4 females and 1 in 6 males under the age of 18 have been vulnerable to this assault. So it is epidemic.
It really is.
And it's not something we should tolerate as a community.
It really is amazing numbers. And, again, one thing that we have to point out is that we're not talking about just the country at large, the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about here in our hometown. I mean, this happens right here in Humboldt County. There are children and youth at risk big time here, and abuse is happening here. It has happened, it is happening, and it will happen. And, we've got to do what we can to make it less prevalent in our little corner of the world, and hopefully the rest of the world will follow suit. But luckily, things are being talked about. Things are changing. We have the FBI acknowledging it, which is really wonderful. Taking action,
and they did just do that federal sting, where they were able to really intervene with human trafficking rings that had been going on. And so I think, what we want to do is to be able to keep the awareness going and keep the conversation going, the dialogue going, so that it just isn't just this thing that happens episodically in the media, and then we pretend we can go back to our little lives and it doesn't matter. Because people are surviving every day in really horrific, oppressive, abusive, violent circumstances, and that is not okay.
And I really appreciate it. I'm sorry, Megan.
Go ahead.
What you were saying before, Sherry, about just coming to the healing breakfast, and if you don't have your voice or you're not a person that speaks about these things right now, that's to come in and be in a community of people that are there, know that this happens, wants to be of support. Sometimes just being around that can be really, really helpful. And I really urge our other community members to think about how you can create that in your social circle, is spaces for people to maybe bring this conversation up, because we don't like to talk about this stuff, but also to respect the survivors, that it needs to be at their pace, not what we think is right for them or anything, that we all respect that pace. And sometimes people just need to be around people who know it exists, and just knowing it exists and not judging them and maybe not saying anything, because we've had a lot of survivors at different speak outs. I couldn't say anything. That's not what they needed right then. What they needed was just to be in that community of people who know it exists and will believe and listen to them. So sorry.
And I just wanted to say again to parents, and like the woman that called in, it sounded like she talked to not only her own child, but maybe to other kids as well. But to parents, to be involved with their kids, check their cell phones, check their text messages, check their Facebook, talk to them about pictures that are and are not appropriate. There should not be any pornographic pictures of kids that they're sending back and forth on their phones. So really staying involved with your own kids. And then like that woman, if you have other kids that you are opening yourself up to talk to, and if you are a victim or you feel, whether you're a youth or an adult, and feel victimized, then to talk to someone, a trusted person, whether it's a parent, a teacher, a probation officer, another service provider, and to be informed of the services that are out there. Children Family Services offers trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, which can be really helpful to people trying to get over some traumas that they have experienced.
So, one thing, Megan, that you mentioned was, checking the cell phones, the computers, that kind of thing. I guess kind of a fine line. How do you, when you're dealing with teenagers, it's like, what's invasive and oppressive, and what's appropriate as far as what's any advice on how to make that work without saying, yes, get off my back, get off, you know, stop looking at my cell phone and my computer and whatnot.
If you're a parent, then mm-hmm. you have to parent that child until they are 18 or out of your home, and you have to set guidelines, and you have to tell them what is okay and what is not okay.
Yep.
So letting them know if somebody says no, that's it. They mean no. Mm-hmm. And if you go beyond that, then you're in danger. And so making it very clear that saying no and that this is what is allowed while you're living in our house, and we love you, but these are the rules we expect you to follow, and we're going to hold you accountable for that, which means we're going to be, maybe we're going to check your cell phone once in a while. Mm-hmm. We expect to have the password to your Facebook or your other, your Twitter accounts or the other things. And that's because we love you and we want you to be safe.
Yep, that's the right answer. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, you know, I've talked with other parents. Like, how do you even? It's like it's just part of the rules, you know. You know, this, you know, you don't get to be a legal adult until you're 18, and that's why, you know, parents, we have to keep an eye on these things, make sure that the kids are making wise decisions, because you know. There are bad decisions that that can be made, and as parents with kids living under our own roofs, this is our chance for us to intervene and help.
So. And also to acknowledge that none of us get through life without making mistakes.
No.
And yeah. Them making a mistake doesn't mean that they're bad or, you know, any judgment around that. It's our life experiences, and I know I've hopefully continue to learn from my mistakes.
Yep. All right, we are just about out of time. I'll give everyone maybe each a minute just to sum up their thoughts.
Start, I guess we'll kind of, Megan,
we'll go start with you and work our
well,
way
first,
back.
First, we should say thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy day to be here with us today, and really appreciate the work that you do.
Well, I work with youth and their families intensively, and that's kind of my passion. And so these are conversations that I have with parents and youth that I work with. So parents, talk to your kids. That would be my final.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah.
You're their parent. Marianne.
So I'm Marianne with Rape Crisis, and just want to reiterate our crisis line number, which is 707-445-2881 in Humboldt, and 707-445-2851 in Del Norte. And so I guess I just want us, again, like what Sherry was saying, is to continue having this conversation, not just wait for a radio program, but know that this is in our community. And we need to be educated about it. So take the time. And sometimes adults can learn from our youth. And so being open to that and hearing about that information, even being educated by our youth, can be a really important part. And it's that important exchange that can happen. So listen and don't judge and call for support and assistance.
Thank you, Marianne. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to be here this morning. Jackie Brennan at the Raven Project Youth Service Bureau through Redwood Community Action Agency. And it's a conversation that I know that we've had as an agency with Rape Crisis Team in the past. And it's good to be able to have that conversation with more people that are affected by these problems that our youth are experiencing. And I guess I'd like to just reiterate that I feel very privileged to work with the youth that I do work with, and that all of their strength and resilience is really what drives me to continue to do this. And that I hope that that as a community we can come together and look for ways to support them that will work for them.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Jackie. Thank you so much for all the great work you do and taking time to be here with us today. I want to say, if you're in a situation and it's hurting you, that you are not alone. You might feel alone, but you are not alone. There are so many of us who have survived really the unspeakable, and you belong to, unfortunately, a really big, huge family of people. But there is help. And there is hope, and there is change, and there is a life of happiness after the help that you get. I also want to remind us that we'll be entering our second week.
That is right.
Stop the Violence, Start the Healing, 18th year, and we'll be addressing the topic of sexual assault in the military sexual trauma.
And this has, of course, been getting a lot of attention in the media lately and in Congress, as well it should. It's been around ever since the military has been around. And we're going to be talking, we'll be starting off the conversation with Colonel Ann Wright. We talked to her, what, 7 years ago or so?
Yes, yes. And she's just been a dedicated, wonderful voice on behalf of vets. And she will share what she's been doing and where we're at in this struggle. And then the next day, there'll be a local veteran who is going to talk with you. And again, these are interviews 9 to 9:30. And then on Thursday, you get to talk to...
I'll be talking with Kirby Dick. I actually have talked with him already. This conversation has already been recorded. This is the writer and director of the documentary, Academy Award-nominated documentary, The Invisible War. Really incredible film. And I was really happy that he agreed to let us talk with him. And that's a riveting conversation. You'll hear that on the morning of the 14th. And then, of course, the 15th will be another two-hour panel.
Another panel with our local Kim Hall from HSU Vet Center. And Maureen Phillips will be on the phone. We have to remember she's there.
Yep.
And she is a former retired captain and a disabled vet and a survivor. She's also has a doctorate, and her research was on military sexual trauma.
Right.
So we're all, and hopefully Paula, but we I'm not taking her name off the schedule.
Yeah.
She'll probably definitely want to come.
Yeah.
Even if we have to drive her.
Right. Right. Okay. We can do that.
We'll wheel her here.
Her name is still there, and we'll stay there.
Good. Absolutely.
And then our final week, healing from trauma, and we'll talk more about that. And again, the Healing Breakfast, please put it on your calendar, 8 to 10.
On November 22nd, which is National Stop the Violence Day, which is fantastic.
Right.
All right. Thanks so much to our panel for coming out and giving of your time. We really appreciate that. And from Paula's experience, we know just getting here, it can be a dangerous situation. So we appreciate you doing that. All right. So we're going to let our sponsors say a few words, and we'll hand it over to Mike up next.